Hey, we are on chapter 15 of Agaris. The Kodesh can be found on page 465, 466. A new letter. This letter's got nothing to do with charity. The Alter Rebbe in this letter, I'm not sure the background behind it, like for whom it was written, where it was sent. That's not included in any of the, like the history, by the provenance behind the letters, but this one, the Alter Rebbe is trying to answer the problem. I don't know if it's a problem or not, how you say it, but the idea of explaining spheroids that we know about because of what it says in the Zohar, that the spheroids are infinite expressions of God in a limited way. That seems to be a bit of an oxymoron in and of itself.
It cooks your noodle medium.
Yeah, immediately.
Medium cook.
Okay.
Your noodles.
Based on the idea, because since what the spheres are doing is trying to convey the infiniteness of Hashem, so we talked about this one a lot, a great detail in Shar Yehud Vamuna, but not mentioning so much the idea and the concept of spheres. And this is talked about again at great length in chapter 20 of Agaris HaKodesh, which we're not that far away from. But in chapter 20, it's said in much harder language to understand. So the basic premise is that if it's coming from Ein Sof, if it's coming from the infiniteness of Hashem, it's going to maintain that integrity of being infinite. But the Zohar says, and Pasuk Eliyahu, which Lubavitch and Tfarim are accustomed to say on Friday before Mincha, that there are Eser Tikkunin Shein Eser Levushin, there are 10 adornments, which are called the 10 garments, which is the 10 spheroids, Menhagim Behind Almin, which Hashem directs the world through them. And so if Hashem is directing them, the whole concept of Simsum is also the same type of a deal. I mean, that's how we get spheroids to begin with. Anytime you're talking about the creation process, so you're talking about this idea, the godliness maintains its integrity as far as its infinite quality is concerned, but because we're talking about different worlds, a world is defined how much, that'd be a quantitative thing, godliness is revealed, or how godliness is revealed. That might be a qualitative thing.
Or what? Yeah. It could be one.
Okay, so that
angle of infinity is infinite.
Okay.
That way I can get
okay.
Still kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cooking.
So, and then each and every world has 10 spheres. But there's differences between the 10 spheres. He's going to say, our persona is also a composition of 10 spheres, like he said back in chapter 3, the beginning of Tanya, and which is patterned from them and drawn down from them. And as much as however kind a person might be, I don't think that they have infinite kindness, even though he's going to talk about the kindness of Avraham Avinu, which is talked about in the Zohar. Okay, so now, lahavin mashal umalitza divrei chachamim v'chidoisim be'inyan hasfirois, to understand an example and a parable for the words of our sages in their expressions, he uses the word riddles, I'm calling the word sfirois. Okay, the word mushel usually refers to something having to do with Torah Shebal Peh, as the Torah is called Mushel HaKadmoni, the primordial example. The entire creation is contained in Tanakh, and for sure in the five books. Okay, so the entire creation is there. So if you want to explain something that's in a pasuk, so you'd use the word mashal. If you want to explain the words of Torah Shebal Peh, so you use the word malitza, which in allegory and metaphor is the way he translates it in English. I don't know if there's any great difference other than that I've always understood allegory as being a remez and metaphor as being a drosh, but neither of those words are used here. So the English totally and completely loses it. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about this idea of sviris, so moida is zois ba'aretz, mipi kadushe elyon nishmasa eden. So it's made known to those people down here that from that which I've heard from my holy teachers, lekar ksas elasechel my diksiv m'sariach zolakai, to understand this expression that from my flesh I perceive godliness, which that is a pasuk in Job, and that the idea being is, since it was as nasa adam b'tzalmeinu k'dmaseinu, that man was made in our image and our form, so therefore if I look at myself, I would be able therefore to know about Elokus. That's the idea, and this idea is used throughout the length and breadth of Kabbalah and Hasidus, the Zohar, any type of metaphysics books, they're all used. And in fact, we'd have to say that the Chumash itself uses it when it says, Vayemer Elokim. Right at the very onset, well, what does that mean? Since we have this prohibition of believing in the corporeality of the Almighty, so when it says, Vayemer Elokim, so therefore we have to explain, well, what does that mean? So it's a very common thing to use us as an example to describe Elokus. Shakavanu l'klahavik sas Elokusa yizbarach min nefesh al nubeshes b'basar ha'adam. That the idea is that we could be able to understand a little bit of Hashem's godliness by looking at our soul as it's enclosed in a body. Based on what our sages say about the verse Baruch Nafshi Yasser Hashem, Ma'akadosh Baruch Hu Kulaf HaNeshama, just like Hashem fills the entire creation, that's what it says over there, so too our Neshama fills our entire body. And in fact, we have various comparisons that it says that the world is called Guf Gadol, and our bodies are called an Olam Katan, a big body, a small world. And we say that a person who saves the life of a person and saves an entire world by the Entebbe raid. When the Rebbe was talking about analyzing the situation that happened, so he says there were four people that were killed by Entebbe. And the people were going, oh, look, only four people were killed. Okay? I mean, this could have been devastating. There could have been hundreds of people killed. Okay, but only four people were killed. So the Rebbe said, generally in Histalshalus, we have Arba Ulamais. We have four worlds. And if every person is like an Ulam, so it's four worlds. It's like the whole entire Seder Histalshalus. How can you say only four people were killed? The word only and four, when it talks about people getting killed, doesn't fit. Because every person is an Ulam, not just an Ulam, but an Ulam Mali, a full world. Because since it is that we're patterned after the creation, we're patterned after Hashem, how Hashem is manifest, that would mean in every detail. And this we know from a story from the Rebbe Rashab. The Rebbe Rashab invited his older brother, the Rizah, for supper. In the middle, it was a weekday Shabbat, a weekday. No, it wasn't a Shabbos or anything. He invited him over, came over. He was very excited. The Rizah was much more worldly than the Rashab. And he read journals and newspapers and these things. He came in, he was very excited that what? This is, I think it was 1902 or 1906. And the scientists in Vienna had discovered that there's a vein or a nerve, the word in Hebrew is exactly the same, that when you put your head down, it facilitates concentration, and when you pick your head up, it facilitates memory. And people do this automatically. When you're trying to remember something, you go like, you put your head up. And when you're trying to concentrate, you're putting your head down. Okay? This automatic reflex in your within your brain to get your brain in the right position that the chemical should be moving the right way. Does that mean you can't concentrate if your head's up? Yeah, you probably could. Okay? The Rebbe Rishab, this is, he said over to the table, and the Rishab said nothing. After they got done eating, so the Rebbe Rishab went into the library and he took out a copy of a Teres Rosh, which was written by the Mittler Rebbe in the 1830s. And there he opened up and said that there is a vein or a nerve in the base of the brain that when you put your head down, it facilitates concentration, and when you pick your head up, it facilitates memory. So the Rebbe, the Raza, the older brother, was like totally blown away. And he said, if this is the case, then our grandfather was a tremendous medical professor. And the Rishab said that if you can see Adam Ha'elyon, it reflects down here in Adam HaTachtein. That if you could see the way that things are aligned in the spheres, like evidently the Mittler Rebbe could, so you'd be able to see that there's something going on in the person as well. And there are numerous stories involving the Baal Shem Tov and other Rebbes that were able to facilitate a cure of an individual by dealing with the problem of the ailment and its spiritual source, rather than looking at just the symptom of how it was affecting the body. So it also the Rebbes would go to the source from where the problem was coming, and thereby deal with that and take care of the problem down here. Meaning as if that, since it's all connected and it's coming from it, so that our Chochmah, for example, is coming from Chochmah of Atzilus. And if there's some kind of a problem in Chochmah of Atzilus, as it's coming down to our Chochmah, it's going to create a problem down here. So rather than just creating or dealing with our Chochmah and sending this guy to a psychiatrist, so let's deal and tap into Chochmah of Atzilus up there, as it's relating to this individual, see how we can correct that, and then the problem is going to be solved. That's one way of doing it.
Easier said.
You just got to find the person to do it, yes.
Amazing. Wow.
Indeed. Okay? And it could very well be, we don't know, but there are books and books and books of people who went to the Rebbe with problems, and the Rebbe would just say, nah, it's not a problem. Okay? Or the person, oh, zillions of stories. Shlomo Kunin came back in, it was 1980, I think it was, 84. The doctors gave him like months to live, and he came back with the x-rays, and he wanted to come back, and he wanted to die in Crown Heights. Okay, and he came up to the Rebbe, and he showed the Rebbe the x-rays, and the Rebbe, this is by dollars, it's all on film. The Rebbe took a look at the x-rays and said, I don't see anything. And he went back, then flew back to California, and he took more x-rays, and there's nothing there. So he's still around. He's still kicking. Okay. So and there's lots of stories where people would tell the Rebbe of headaches, and the Rebbe would have him tell him check your tefillin, and there'd be problems with the word al yadecha or al beinei necha or something like that. I know somebody who had an eye problem, and there was a yud missing in the word einecha. This kind of stuff. I have a friend, just as an aside, that this person, he was a young bacher in the 50s, and he was having terrible headaches. And he figured he's going to go to the Rebbe in Yechidus, and the Rebbe's going to tell him to get his tefillin checked, or he should increase in learning something to take care of the headaches. So he got into Yechidus, and the Rebbe told him, he talked to him in Yiddish, Do in America is Do Agute Produkt. Here in America, there's a very good product. Seheist Anison. As men had a tutvetik, nempman a poor tablet. When the headache, the tutvetik gate up. Okay? He said, told him, go to cross the street and ask the market over there. It was like a little, like a grocery store, you know. And he said, they have these little tins sitting on the counter of Anison. So he said, you'll go and you'll buy. So he said to the Rebbe that he doesn't speak English, and maybe he's not going to remember. Could the Rebbe please write it down on a piece of paper for him?
So my friend was going through his father's papers, and he saw this piece of scrap paper with the word Anison written on pencil, and asked, "What's this all about?" So he said, "It's the Rebbe's handwriting. The Rebbe wrote and told me to start taking Anison when I had a headache." Okay, so now, so does that mean that the Rebbe was telling him that he should deal with it symptomatically? Maybe, yeah, but maybe it was just a way of directing the refuah from Lamaila to this guy in a way that would seem not miraculous, like with a Bene Necho, or start learning, you know, a perek of Shulchan Aruch every day or something like that. Just, you know, sometimes you need to act normal too for a miracle to occur, because miracles occur in different manners. And the vast majority of miracles, and today all miracles, are enclosed in nature. So you'll never know that you're looking at a miracle to begin with, because you could always explain it naturally. It's the whole deal going back to with Entebbe. The Rebbe said that if you ever find yourself in Entebbe Airport, you have to say the bracha, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Sha'asa Neis B'makom Zeh. Because it was a miracle that happened. You could explain it about the Israeli ingenuity and the planning and a whatnot like that. But the same thing was tried in Iran, and that failed miserably by the Americans. So the Rebbe said, for sure it's a miracle, but you can explain it naturally. Okay, Purim you could explain naturally too. There's lots of miracles that happen naturally, because that's one of the ways in which Hashem relates to the world. In fact, nature itself is a miracle. It's just that we can predict that the miracle is going to happen, so we call it natural. So it's going to affect all people, Alpi Maimer HaZohar, this is just as it is that Hashem fills the world, so too our soul fills our body. This is explained in the Zohar on the Pasuk, Vayipa Va'apav Nishmas Chaim, that he blew into, this is talking about the creation of Adam, that he blew into his nostrils a soul of life. The man de nafich metechei nafich, that when one blows from his innermost midst. This is already back in chapter 2, where the Alter Rebbe puts forth the postulate that there's a nefesh elokis, there's a second soul, based on this idea of ayipach apav nishmas chayim, he blew into the soul of life. And what is it? It's a very essential expression of godliness. Because if you're going to blow up something, you have to take a real deep breath first. And that deep breath, then you exhale really hard with force, and then the thing blows up, like a balloon, for example. Okay, whereas if you're just talking, you have to breathe, but you don't have to take a deep breath, and you don't blow out hard, because then you're just going to get hyperventilated. Okay, so our soul then, he wants to say, is by looking, we can see, by looking at us, we can see Elokus. We can see what the composition of Hashem is made of. Vafilu nefesh de'asiyah. Even a low-level soul, the lowest level, the lowest world, and I'm a little. My question is, why did he just stop at saying Asiya? Because in other places he says nefesh de malchus de Asiya. For a soul, he wants to indicate it's really the bottom. So nefesh is the lowest world of the soul, and malchus is the lowest sphere, and Asiya is the lowest olam. So that's an expression of the lowest soul. Here, he just says nefesh de Asiya. So that a soul of nefesh asiya bo amazivik zund asiya. Yeah, this is fancy Kabbalistic terms for any very easy concept. Okay, so the soul we're talking about, you can be looking at this in a physical way. How does a person is a product of their mother and father, which is zachar in the keva. Mm-hmm. Okay, the soul, that's the body. It takes three to make a baby, as you talk back and is alluded to in the Gemara. You mentioned very briefly in chapter 2.
And the father Hashem.
That the the father provides all the white parts of the body, and the mother provides all the red parts of the body, and Hashem provides all the spiritual stuff of the neshama, of the body. So our soul, even the lowest level soul, is a product of the unification of the spheres, the male and the female spheres of God, which are known as Zohar and Nekeva, which would be Zeron Pim, the emotions of Chesed through Yesod, and the feminine aspect of Hashem is Malchus, which we talked about that before, mm-hmm. Avasiyah, So therefore, why is this the lowest level soul? What makes it, first of all, a low-level soul? Or how do we know it's a low-level soul? A low-level soul would be described or defined as an individual who has limited appreciation for the spiritual. Moshe, for example, is a high-level soul. Moshe spoke to Hashem, could recognize Hashem, can talk with Hashem, could get answers from Hashem. That's a high-level soul. Most people walking around today don't experience Elokus to be able to say, I saw God. And usually if they do, we kind of think that they're crazy. Okay, so because what's determined as being normal now is that most people are a product of low-level godliness from Asiya. V'hamoichin sholahem. And what about a person's intellect? And intellect, how could you say, okay, I can understand. My emotions come as an emotional expression of Hashem. But what about my intellect? So the intellect, the moichin, heimuchin is ruach and neshama dezun. That's going to come from a higher level of the masculine and the feminine. Okay, so the bottom aspect of my soul is going to come from the bottom aspect of the Elokus. A little higher aspect of my soul is going to come from a little higher aspect of Elokus. Okay, so he'll say that it comes from the level of neshama of the midos. That, for example, like chachma, abina, and das of chesed, for example, is where the person's intellect is going to come from. Shehein hein acharayim de kelim de zunda atzilus shehem elokus mamash. That this creative aspect of the spheres, he calls it the back part of the keli, not to be confused with the back part which has enlivens klippa, but we use the term keli for conveying godliness, oros and keli. And we always warn, we admonish a person, when you're thinking, you use the term oros and keli, don't think glasses of water. That's not what oros and keli are. The word or doesn't mean light. The word keli doesn't mean vessel. So that's what you're thinking. Vessels in, what do you call it? Light in vessel. So you're thinking basically glasses of water. Fancy glasses of water. So that's not it at all. The word keli means something that has a use. Like in classic Hebrew, a hammer is a keli. A ladder is a keli. A board is a keli. These are not okay. Vessels. They have a use. You can say, well, maybe it's a tool. No, well, a board's not a tool, unless you're using it to bang something with. A board is the object of the tool. But a board's called a keli because it has a use, as opposed to, say, a rock. A rock is not a keli, because rocks are just supposed to sit there. You want to bang something with a rock, it doesn't work as well as it does with a hammer. Okay, you want to break something open? You have things to break something over. It works a lot better than a rock. Okay, you could say, I have a use for a rock. Which does, by the way, have halachic ramifications, because a rock on Shabbos is muksa. But if you designated that rock, for example, to be a doorstop, then it's now a keli. It's not muksa anymore. Okay? So, the term keli means that it has a use. But if you look at a keli, if you're looking at a cup has three parts. It has the inside, the outside, and the cup itself. The inside is where the liquid goes, looking at these cups on the table. The outside is how you hold on to it. The dimensions of how much you're going to be able to put into that cup is determined by the cup itself. Okay? So the creative aspect of the spheres, of the kalim, is the outside part. The part that, because what's the outside part for? It's for to be able to relate to somebody else. Okay? You have the outside of the glass or the outside of the cup so you can hold it. Okay? So the outside of the spheres are what express the godliness in such a way in a creative manner. That's what he says, the acharayim. Very often, like I say, and it doesn't mean, usually acharayim refers to klippa. Here he's not talking about klippa. Very often he would say, he would use the word chitzonius of the keli. And he says, and this is, where's it all coming from? It's acharayim de kelim de zun de atzilus shehem elokus mamish. That the spheres of atzilus are absolutely 100% godliness. They're defined as eser spheres bli ma she'ein lehem mahus. The Sefer HaBoher describes the spheres of Atzilus. There are 10 of them. They're infinite. And they have no existence separate from Hashem. They're not separate from Hashem. Yuvahayehuchad, Yuvahgarmehuchad. It says in the Zohar that Hashem is one with the light. Hashem is one with the Keli. This is talked about at a great length in chapter 20. Shehen hein, oh, I just said that. Zundat seal, Shehen alukas mamash, Shebetoich hameir orin said Baruchu, that within the spheres you have the infiniteness of Hashem conveyed. In other words, the whole purpose of the 10 spheres of Atzilus is to make Ein Sof user-friendly. The Ein Sof is still Ein Sof, but you now have 10 different levels of Ein Sof. So you've got 10 finite infinities is what comprises the world of Atzilus. Okay, which means now, but since you have the word finite there, even though there's still infinite, it's finite chokhman, finite bina, finite das, finite chesed, gvur, etc. But it's infinite wisdom, infinite understanding, infinite knowledge, infinite kindness, infinite severity, but it's limited. There's parameters to it. There are only 10 of them. So as soon as you can start putting a number on it, now we can relate to the limitation.
It's less, a little less infinite.
Yeah. It can now relate to limitation. Okay? It's not limited in Atzilus, but can relate to limitations. Limitations are going to start in the world of Bria, which is why we call creation. What's in creation? There's nothing in creation. There's Afsharius Hamatzius, the possibility that something's going to exist. Exist means that it looks at itself and says, hey, here I am. And that's why you have Neshamais, and you have the higher angels, Michael, Gavriel, Uriel, and Raphael. Raphael are in Bria. But what's a Neshama? A Neshama, if you could draw a picture of a Neshama, would look just like Hashem. That's what a Neshama is. It's Elokus.
Piece of Hashem.
Yeah, but it's in a state of Bria, which means Afsharius Hamatzius. It has the possibility of existence. And all the souls all exist separate one from another in the world of Bria. Your soul knows where it is, my soul knows where it is. And my soul is not your soul, and your soul is not my soul. Everybody has their own individual soul. But if you could draw a picture of your soul, your neshama, it would look like Hashem. Because it still has that infinite quality to it. But now it's more limited than it was in the world of Atzilus. Because in Atzilus, you only got 10 of them. Okay? In Bria, you have infinite possibilities already just right there. Okay? So that by the time it goes all the way down to here, so your neshama closes in your body specifically, and it doesn't enclose in mine. Your neshama fits your body, and it won't fit into my body. We never have that process. Let's say we're sharing a room in a hotel. Okay? You're in your bed, I'm in my bed, and we wake up, the alarm goes off at 6:30 in the morning, okay? And I do my first breath in the morning. The chances of me sucking in your neshama instead of mine are none. Even though they're both coming down, that's the most ridiculous thing I probably ever said in my entire life.
I'm picturing it.
Yeah, because we try to put it into figurative terms. Because your neshama left your body and went lamaila. It's got to come back down. So what happens? It got crossed on the way down, and your neshama goes into my body, and my neshama goes into your body, and you wake up tomorrow, and you're me, and I'm you.
Yeah.
Not at all. Not even close.
If I could draw it, I had a picture in my head.
Yeah, not the wires don't get crossed.
Infinite.
It wouldn't. Maybe they make really bad movies about such things happening. But it's such an impossibility. It's not even discussed how impossible such a thing is, because my neshama doesn't fit into your body. It'd be like trying to stick. You can have, let's say, a circle that has exactly the same area as a square. You could make such a thing. Okay? Try sticking a square into a circle hole. Even if they have the same area, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's a good example.
Yep. Everybody's elocus is different. That's in the world of Bria. Okay, and it comes down here. That's why it's the acharayim of the kelim, the outside part, which what can relate to creation. Everybody's neshama, by the way, happens to be rooted in Atzilus. I mean, all elokus comes from Atzilus. If it's down here, guess what? It's rooted in Atzilus.
Has to.
So do I have a neshama of Atzilus? No, I do not have a neshama of Atzilus. Maisha had a neshama of Atzilus. What's a neshama of Atzilus? Not a neshama of, he would say over here, as I would say, of nefesh de nefesh de malchus de siya, is how much processing does it get? Maisha Rabbeinu's neshama came straight down. My soul took the local. Had to stop at every stop. Got another bag at every stop. Oh, you're going to the next stop? Here, take this with you. Oh, you got room for something else? Another stop, take this with you. So that the time I walk, I get off the train, I am totally and completely bagged down. I have a lot of baggage. Okay? And that's a term that's used in psychiatry and psychology. He's got a lot of baggage. Where does it come from? Oh, it came on his way down.
So I can survive 40 days in train.
Yeah, indeed.
He didn't have any baggage.
Because Hashem, and even the Kalim and Atzilus are one with Hashem. He talks about this later in chapter 20. Al kain gam nishmas ha'odam meor or ein se baruchu amalubish veganis ba'ora chachma shabo. Therefore, even the soul and the physical person, there's illuminated within that neshama the infinite light of Hashem, which is enclosed and hidden in wisdom. Lahachias is ha'adam to enlighten the person. Umamena yachal ha'adam lahachin having ksas b'sirus el yarnis. And because of that, because, this sounds somewhat Cartesian, I know, because there is this bit of chachma, of Atzilus, which is filtering through the creation process and coming down and taking part and enlivening my soul, therefore I have the ability to understand that there's something called chachma of Atzilus.
Okay,
like I said, it sounds Cartesian because Descartes said, if I can think of a concept called God, it must be because there's something called God.
That I was agree with him.
That was his, well, duh. That was his, that's called Cartesian logic.
I think therefore I am.
It's called circular logic, because, you know, it's Cartesian, you know, proving itself with itself. Because I can think about it, must mean that it exists. Okay?
Yeah.
But you can think of a lot of fantastic things that don't exist, so. Mm-hmm. So, but this though, I have an ability not to just think, but be able to relate to Chachma Vatzilus, which is the beginning part of the creation. I can relate to it because a bit of Chachma Vatzilus has filtered down into my neshama to be able to allow me to relate to it. And it's talked about, it's brought down in the Basar Lagani Maimor and the earlier ones. And Perkei Avos and the Hasidic explanations of the first Mishnah, chapter 5, which says that the world could have been created in 1, why did Hashem create it in 10? Okay, so this, the answer, according to Kabbalah, why is it Hashem created the world using a process? Could Hashem have just said, let there be creation, and would it exist the way it does now?
If he wished.
Of course! Like, duh, Hashem can do anything he wants. So the question is, why did he do it with 10? And the answer is, begin the Ishta Maiden Bay, in order that we should have what to talk about. If it would be Hashem just said creation and there's a creation, so then how would we describe creation? We wouldn't be able to talk about it. We'd just say, how did we get here? We're here, ta-da! That would be the end of it. The books would be a whole lot shorter. Okay, this class would have been chopped in a third. Okay? But because Hashem created a process and then let it be known that there is this process, so now we get to relate to Elokus on all the different levels
of these processes. And we can talk about 10 spheres and how the 10 spheres are manifest in Atzilus. And we can talk about Arba Olamos and talk about Elokus even in Asiya, and talk about how Hashem even comes down into this physical world. That's why Hashem created the world the way that he did, is in order to give us what to talk about. It sounds kind of... it sounds kind of trite on the part of God, but it's a big favor for Hashem, because what are we here for? The whole reason why we're here is Lassus Lillius Barak Dir B'Tachtenu, Nikadon Shem, for Hashem. We should know what it is we're talking about. If I have to make a dwelling for Hashem, so I should know what it is I'm making a dwelling for, and I should know what the word dwelling means, and I should know what down here means. So as a kindness to us, Hashem said, okay, we'll do it this way. And it's the same thing with all the other spheres also as well. Ah, tzorech lahakdim. Mashi shemaiti memori olav shalom. Al pesach anechi offer va'offer. It says, I have to explain that which I heard from my father, from one of my teachers. Al pasik v'anechi offer va'offer sh'amar Avram avinu olav shalom. Al ha'arz nishmasa hamiris begufa me'ora chesed elyon. Avraham said, I am nothing but dust and ashes. Wow. You can bring it in. Okay, I am nothing but dust and ashes. That what is he referring to as being dust and ashes is not his body. Even though the pshat, Rashi brings down the pshat. Why am I like ashes? Because I got thrown into a furnace and I walked out. I should have been incinerated and reduced to ashes. Why am I like dust? Is because I fought a war against four kings. They should have just trampled me into non-existence. That's the pshat according to Rashi. See, here what he wants to talk about is he's talking about not his body, but he's talking about the godliness that is enlivening his soul that's in his body. And Avraham, we know, was the embodiment of Chesed of Atzilus. Such that it says, I think we quoted this not too long ago, that when Avraham was in this world, Chesed of Atzilus, brought down in the Zohar, Chesed of Atzilus complained to Hashem, I have nothing to do, because Avraham is doing everything that I should be doing. So Avraham recognized, when you use the expression, I'm nothing but dust and ashes, there's a certain level of humility there. Because by the time it got to his body, even Avraham, that even this is a full conveyance, Avraham was definitely an Hashem of Atzilus. And what was being conveyed was Chesed of Atzilus. But even still, Avraham said, I'm in a physical world, I'm in a physical body, and therefore what's coming down into this world can best be described as dust and ashes. It's what are dust and ashes? He's going to talk about it. It doesn't get lower than that. If you burn something...
I'm thinking fumes.
Yeah, if you burn something and it all burns up, the only thing that's left is the ash. Because we're talking about the composition, things are made out of
carbon.
Of dirt, which is carbon in this case, which is what ash is, and water vapor, moisture. And there's a lot of air, and there's also some fire in there too, which is why it allows it to burn. So when you burn it, all those other elements, they're gone. They get destroyed. They get released. Carbon doesn't burn. Okay? You can't burn ash. No, it's its lowest form. Okay? Similarly also with dust. Okay? If you know the whole process of decomposition, what do things decompose to the lowest state? Dirt, right? Compost, right? What is compost?
Dirt.
You take vegetable matter, and it would even be any organic matter.
Even compost is more than dirt. Dirt's less than compost.
Okay, but dirt compost will eventually turn into dirt.
Mm-hmm.
I once cleaned my next door neighbor's gutters. They had trees growing in them. Okay.
Wow.
And it was really pretty amazing. I said, wow, this is pretty, this is like a whole ecosystem over here, because he had,
well, he's turned into mulch.
What he had, what he had was pine trees that were taller than his roof. So the pine needles were dropping into the gutter. Okay? And they're sitting there in a moist environment for who knows how many years. So the top layer was green pine needles. The next layer was brown pine needles. The next layer under that was brown gook. And the next layer under that was dirt. And the seeds that were falling in fell into the dirt. They had all this nutrient mass over there, muck. And it was growing beautiful pine trees in his gutters.
Wow.
Okay? So the lowest part of decomposition is going to be dust. So Avram recognizes what's the elikus in his body? Dust and ashes at the lowest part.
Which has the power of
growth. Yes.
Yeah.
The gufa meir or chesed elyon v'hu midas ha'ava rabba. Avraham, what it was, is Avraham was an expression of the Ava Rabba, which is this higher level of love of Elikus. Shehaya Oyhev, as a Kaddish Baruch Hu, Ava Gedele Elyon, Kach HaChinath Markavel HaKaddish Baruch Hu. That Avraham loved Hashem so much, Avraham was so given over to conveying Elikus, that he gave up his own freedom of choice. He became a Markava. He became a vehicle for conveying godliness. What's a Markava? Why the expression a Markava, a chariot, is because where does your car go?
Wherever I take it.
Your car goes whichever way you point it.
Or gravity if I'm not.
Okay. And we're talking about smart cars because, right. You know, when those come around and they're going to say, no, I don't think you should go that way. There's a traffic accident that way.
It's still a car. Still a chariot.
It's still going where you want to go. Okay, so.
Or it's programmed.
So Avraham was the embodiment of kindness of Atzilus, and to such an extent that he didn't pose any opposition. What would have happened had Moshe been at Bris Bein and Basarim, not Avraham? Moshe was not in Markava. Okay? Moshe, God would have said, listen, I want to give you guys the Torah. Moshe would have said, okay, fine. We'll take the Torah. Avraham said, I want to see what the Torah is. Moshe would have said, okay, we'll take the Torah. But he said, but wait, there's a problem. They have to go through an hour of purgatory or 400 years in Egypt. Moshe would have said, hell they do. You could give it to them right now. They don't have to go through any of that. And you're not going to do that.
you're right. Moshe
would have fought. No, they don't have to do that.
Abraham.
Okay, no, listen, you give me a... it's like there's a game my kids play. Would you rather? Would you rather this or would you rather that? So my response has always been, I don't do bifurcation. Avraham was given two choices. You could have either door number one, an hour in Gehenna, or door number two, 400 years in Egypt. He didn't stop and say, wait a minute, there's got to be a third option. I don't like either one of these two. Give me a third one. No. He said, okay, this is what I'm offering. I'll take this one. This will be the lesser of the two. Okay, why? Because Avraham didn't fight. Avraham was a, whatever you want, Hashem, that's fine. You want my kids to suffer in Golis for 400 years? Goes into eight.
You know, it must be the best possible option. That's what we're taught to believe. That understand is that if
it was
good. See,
the reality of the two choices, it was the better of the two.
Right, exactly. That's was close enough that he could see it was obvious.
But he didn't think, well, maybe there's a third option. Come on, God, you have infinite wisdom. Come up with a third option, something better.
That's why I'm trying to understand Moshe.
Moshe was a fighter. Moshe was a leader of the Jewish people, always having the best interest at heart for the Jewish people. God would have said, I'm going to punish the Jewish people to Moshe by the Bris Bein of Besorah. Moshe would have said, no. Come up with something else. Do something better. Give us a Torah the way we are. And make it such that we won't have to have this genetic defect. Let the giving of the Torah be what corrects the genetic defect. We have to be perfect. Nobody's perfect anyway. Did the Jews come out of Egypt, were they perfect? No.
29th level too much.
Yeah, okay. No. And when they got the Torah, were they perfect? No, also not, because you have eight more times that they're complaining, we should go back to Egypt. They spent 40 years in the desert after they got the Torah that Holmeister there. So Moshe wouldn't have done Avram. Okay, whatever you want. V'salka daita chamina. You might have thought shebechias chesed v'ava shalamayla b'sviris al yoynis hu me'ein v'sug mahus midas ha'ava rabba shal Avram avino lo v'shalom. You might think that the kindness which is manifest up in the upper spheres, in the world of Atzilus, was similar to the love that Avraham Avinu displayed. Raksha, he gedoyle and iflame, but also just bigger. Lamaila, mailad in case of tachlitz, and much higher than in every way possible. Kinaitim amidus el yenisha ain lehem seifa tachlitz mitzad atzman. That they don't have any end in and of themselves. That if you were examining midas chesed, God's attribute of kindness, you'd never get to the end. Let's just do step by step in God's kindness.
You wouldn't get to the middle.
Yeah, you wouldn't get past the beginning.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay? Because it's an infinite thing. So you would think that that kindness of Avram, the kindness of Atzilus is the same. It's just that Atzilus is a little bit bigger. Because the infiniteness is of Hashem is contained within them, and Hashem is one with them. Which is not the case with a soul, which is enclosed in a body. That has to be limited. Have you ever met anybody with an infinite body? No. So that must mean that anything that's enclosed in the body is also going to be limited. We would have to conclude that Abraham's attributes were similar and comparable to the attributes above. That's why he said, I'm but dust and ashes. Just like the ash is the composition, it is what the tree is. Hanisraf, once it's been burned. Shahaya Murkav Medal Yusaitis Esh Ruach Mayim Adama. That the tree is a composition of fire, air, water, and dirt. The Gimel Yusaitis Esh Mayim Rum Chalaf of a Halacha Lehem. When you burn the thing, so the fire, water, and air leave. V'kilu ba'ashen, and it all goes up in smoke. Ha'mizhavim ha'kavosin, and that's what's bringing their all composition, Kineda. You say to Dalit Shahaya be'eitz, but the fourth attribute, which is in the tree, that's who's offered, that's the ash, Shabai, yared lamata, ve'ein eshe let his bud. It goes down, it falls down to the ground, and you can't burn it anymore. It's what remains. It's the dirt. What is the physical matter of the tree? It's this ash. But this is just a pile of ash. This is a whole huge tree. Yeah, well, if you put moisture into it, and you put air in it, you put a little energy into it, so you get a whole big tree. You remove those, you compress it. What does it compress down to? It compresses down to this little pile. Because the dirt part is the most corporeal. It has a length, breadth, and width, and you can't really measure air or fire. Such that there's a halacha in today's a Rambam that says if you carry a flame outside, you're putter on Shabbos. Because it's just a flame. A flame has no mamashas. A flame has no substance. And in a tree, how much water is there already? All the sap and whatnot, but you know. All of its height, length, and breadth is all because of the dirt composition which is in the tree. The kalshava efer offer, and it all goes back to dirt. Shua efer, which is the ash, hanishar achre shenifrodim emenu ishmaim ruach, which is what's left after the fire, water, and air leave it.
Okay, vehine kamaisha ha offer ein loy dimyan va arach alama husa eight a godel va erach va rach va ove kaitem shinisra for lama husa va love husa. It's all one long sentence. And it's an easy part. This is the easy part. So just like it is, that when you look at this whole giant tree, before it's burned, and you don't look at what it's made out of, even though this is the way it is, but that's the way it is. Okay? What is this? If you're looking at this tree, what is it? It's really just, as far as physical is concerned, it's just this ash pile that's kind of been stretched and mixed with other stuff.
It's a clay.
I don't call it a clay. That's what it is. It's the binder that holds together the water, air, and fire. Yeah. Okay? So, it's like I've talked about before, my favorite halacha involves a shofar on Rosh Hashanah that was used in idolatrous service. A person who blows a shofar on Rosh Hashanah that was used in idolatrous service has not fulfilled his obligation. Why? Because a shofar has to have a minimum size. The minimum size it has to be like bigger than a hand breadth, so it doesn't look like you're blowing into your hand. This shofar could be 4 feet long, but since it is that it has been judged that it needs to be burned, so right now, as it's a 4 foot object, really all is just a small handful of ash. Because that's really what it is.
Spiritually.
Essentially, this is nothing more than a handful of ash. It's got the water, air, and fire still mixed into it. That makes no choice. Halachically speaking, it's not there anymore. Let me go up to the next page a little bit. So it was also with Avraham, about his own attribute of kindness in relating to Hashem, umulbeshes begufa, which is enclosed in his body. The afshehi midas ha'av v'chesed el yoni shabatzilus ha'meir v'nishmasa shahaisa markava el yaina. Even though what was in Avraham's body was really, truly, a chesed of atzilus, such that he was now a chariot for conveying godliness, but by the time it got into his body, through going through the whole entire creation process, through this whole step down of diminution after diminution, there's no way you compare what's in his body and what's in Atzilus. Even though it's you would have to say it's the same thing, but because it was processed so it could fit into his body, you have to conclude it's not comparable. It would be the same thing like saying the ash after the tree was burnt. That's what we want to say. Avraham's level of love that he had for Hashem while he was alive was like the ashes after it was burnt. And Atzilus is like the whole tree. But we said before, what's the whole tree? The whole tree is this pile of ash. And it's just like the same deal with the pile of ash and this beautiful tree that's nice to look at. But basically what he's saying at this point, but this is the best we can explain it. But he goes on for another 6 pages to explain it more. To be continued, we get up to the big word in the middle of the page. Now as regards the totality of the 10 spheroes on the first paragraph on page 469. To be continued.